All right. Welcome to Weed Day Wednesday, everybody. Welcome. We have a really
special
guest. Oh, sorry, I interrupted the blog talk lady. We'll let her do her thing. Anyway, we have a special show tonight. We would actually like to say howdy to Hank. He, again, is not feeling well. He's home with what he calls the crud, and he's had it for a week. So well wishes to Hank, and we hope you're back next week, Hank. In Hank's place today, we have a good friend of ours, Sativa Sean, we'll call him tonight.
Hi, Bellstar. How are you?
Good, Sean. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. And we have three of Tucson's finest doctors here to tell us and talk to us about their experiences with AMMA certifications in Tucson. So welcome to Weed Day Wednesday, Tucson, Arizona's number one online radio podcast about all things medical cannabis. We'll have interviews, strain reviews, product reviews, news, and information about anything and everything medical cannabis related in Tucson, Arizona, and the world at large.
Call, email, or blog your questions and have them aired weekly. We would also like to thank Tumbleweed Health Center for hosting this special show tonight, along with certification. You will find classes, lectures, demonstrations, medications, and all things educational related to medical cannabis. You can also visit our website at www.tumbleweedshealthcenter.com.
Yeah, and we want to give a couple shout-outs to the Growers House. You can find them at 227 East Valencia for all your hydroponic needs and growershouse.com. Also, we would really like to thank those at AZ Med Testing for testing our medicine to make sure that it is free of pests and aliens and fungus and all sorts of bad things we don't want, and full of the good things like CBDs and CBNs and a little THC thrown in there for some fun and some healing as well. I found out some really cool facts about THC. I'm sure the good doctors can tell us more about that. And we would also like to thank, if you have or have not seen the Mary Jane Survival Guide, I don't have one with me, but I think it's, I forget, the mjsurvival.com. Let me make sure that is correct. And this is a great, yep, mjsurvival.com. This is a great little pamphlet full of news information, legal information. There's a lawyer, Dr. Jeffrey Kaufman, is going to be on our show in a couple weeks, and he does some articles for this. You can find 420 friendly businesses, doctors, certification centers, all sorts of good stuff, cooking ideas, recipes. It's a good one, isn't it, Sean?
Yes, very good.
It is very good. So we would like to thank all of those groovy people here. And now we would really like to say thank you to our doctors for coming over tonight. Thank you. Woo-hoo! And we've got a lot of questions for you. And feel free to just interject and tell stories and however it is you want to deal with this interview. So first of all, I have a curiosity question. How many of you are patients yourselves? One, going once, going twice. So we got one patient. Can we give doctor's name? Okay. Dr. Moroso. Is that how you say it? Okay. Okay. Can we ask what ailment you got it for? Is that too personal? You can say
no,
yes.
It's not too personal. I get migraines. That's probably the main thing, because I get migraines to the point where I can't swallow water, I can't swallow pills. So if I do, they just come back up, so they're ineffective.
Oh.
So I usually use a sativa. That usually is what is most effective. It's like the one time sativa actually is typically more effective for the pain condition.
Okay.
But so it's the only thing that works. And really, like, up until this point, patients who are at that level of vomiting and can't keep anything down, then we're like, oh, it tastes like an Imitrex. You're like, really? So you
right.
have three choices. You
right.
have a rectal suppository or cannabis. Yeah. Orifices you can choose from. And
all right.
Myself, I don't mind.
I remember being little. I don't like the other end.
No, no,
no mom. So you vaporize then or in smoke?
Vaporize.
Yeah, both?
I
okay.
Times, obviously
when
not,
you can.
Not in that situation.
Sure.
I have a bad back at times as well.
Okay.
Just from my, do a lot of years of rock climbing.
All right.
I messed up doing that.
Okay.
And so at that time, I prefer to use edibles if I can. But obviously, if I have a migraine and I can't keep them in water, probably an edible is not the first choice. Even the lollipop I
yeah.
can do.
Wow. Even water, huh?
Not even, yeah.
You're just in the state of nothing. At
yeah.
That, you,
yeah. Yeah. It's either usually just, I used to have to take a day off, usually 2 days off. And at this point, if I can usually do it soon, right before you start actually vomiting.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm like back to work, back to functioning, and it's okay. Maybe not right away, a couple hours later, but it's
sure.
not 2 days off of work, 2 days
right.
off of my life.
Sure. Well, that's great. And that's, you know, one of the things that, you know, with migraines not being approved just
right.
recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And their reasoning was, well, chronic pain's there, so you can just put it under that, you know. Oh, okay. But, you know, it's important that, you know, people with pain from whatever ailment, you know, they experience, that they, if they want to find a different way, you know, that they can, they have that choice, you know. And especially for people that have stomach and nausea problems, esophagus problems, they can't even smoke. There's all sorts of different things you can do. Oils, you can do topicals, sprays,
tinctures.
Lotions. Juicing is a new big thing. Eating it, just throw it in with your salad now and you get 60 times the medical value we hear. So can I ask the other doctors, are you going to be patients? Are you going to get certified? Is there...
Well, for me personally, I don't really have any ailments that qualify, so
okay.
I feel pretty lucky to be pretty darn healthy.
Yeah, amen to that. Right on, knock on anything. Hey,
well,
yeah.
If my herniated disc comes back, you betcha on me. Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, no, we won't wish for that.
Yeah.
Dr. May?
Yeah, I'm considering getting a card. I do see a chiropractor from time to time for some comes and goes, but that's been a similar thing for me. It's not just constant chronic. The patients I see are certainly and hurting a lot more than I do. But yeah, if I get another episode, I would definitely consider getting my card.
Yeah.
That's one thing I would like to say about pain. I wish every medical student, allopathic, naturopathic, DL, would have to go through 24 to 48 hours of continuous pain so that they understand what pain is like, because I notice that a lot of doctors don't understand pain.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to understand pain unless you go through it yourself.
That's true.
And it's hard to understand the medications that are given out. I mean, it's really just say, here, just take this.
Right.
For pain, especially if that's all you know, like the opioid medications. But
right, popular
a lot of
one.
Patients, they do not like the opioid medications. They don't like the side effects. They don't like the withdrawal.
Sure.
So I would love it if somehow we could mimic pain in every prescriber, every doctor, so that they know exactly what it's like to have chronic, I know 48 hours is only chronic pain, but at least to know, my gosh, what am I going to do about this pain? And do I really want to take, you know, some heavy-duty prescription drugs and show them the difference between an opioid and maybe cannabis? And
right.
What do they think?
Well, and on that note, I mean, not only just experiencing the actual pain that would bring you to go for a medicine that heavy, but also the side effects of that.
Right.
You know, they're not only do they not experience the pain maybe, and good for them, that's great. We don't wish pain on anybody, but to fully empathize, I came to the word, with somebody, you have to be in their shoes. But then they don't even understand the repercussions of what it does to your livers and your kidneys and just your cells in general. You know,
just an ability to function.
Yeah. You know,
you get the side of it too. You get the big side of that is that the ramifications of addiction to or the opioids and or benzodiazepines are so much more dramatic and drastic than having an addiction to cannabis. And while we don't, as physicians, I don't think we'd ever want to prescribe anything that has an addictive quality to it.
Right.
The reality is we do.
Right.
And the thing is, you need to have more of a harm reduction plan.
They do, and you have, and I think as just Americans, who knows who's listening to this, but in general, Americans have a challenge with moderation and addiction, and so, you know, things get out of hand very easily, and, you know, pretty soon you're addicted, and you don't even know it, and you don't know why, and you've never done it, and there you go, and then you have pain specialists, quote, that are giving you all this stuff and saying, oh, like you said, just take this, and call me in the morning, and the next day they're addicted. And it's just, you know, the side effects of cannabis are what relieves people a lot of times, you know.
Yeah, I see a big problem with me, too, is with the addiction to, you know, a lot of the oxycodones, especially, is one I think most overly prescribed, I would say. And to younger and younger generations, I
mm-hmm.
know a whole group of young guys who are super talented BMX riders. And they all had been prescribed oxys at one point for breaking the cerebellum once that week.
Yeah, I was going to say, which one?
They're all addicted. But then I cool and cultural and, you know, and they're a little demographic at that time. And then over when they changed the prescription of the oxy to a gelatinous form, you can snort them. All this whole group had a drug taken away from them, although illegal. I mean, granted, very illegal. But they had this whole group, I mean, that I just know, even on the streets of Tucson, everyday people that you see, and now this whole group of people are now addicted to heroin. And
that's
frightening.
That's awful. It is.
I mean, I know a 26-year-old that died about 2 months ago. And it's, you know, and so sometimes, I mean, it's definitely a soft spot I have in my heart for people who have come into my office and whether they've gone through, you know, heroin recovery or whatever they were on, now they want to try cannabis, and it's, you know, it's brought up to them, in my opinion.
Yeah. It is, and because of, you know, the stigma the government gave it so long ago, people don't, you know, for whatever reason, they don't do their own enough research of their own to you know, counter the facts that the government put out that are not true, that the government knows are not true, you know. So, yeah, very interesting.
I think it's important for doctors and patients to know also how safe it is to use cannabis along with opioid medications to reduce the level of the opiates in the bloodstream while making it more effective in the body. Which is the drug interaction we don't see very often. It's very unique in cannabis. And it's something that can be real effective in helping patients wean off their opiate-based medications.
Yeah. And a lot of times they don't, sometimes they can get off completely, and sometimes it's just to lessen them, and that's even just a huge step, you know, for their systems alone, you know.
Yes, I'm also intrigued by the anti-cancer properties of cannabis.
Uh-huh.
I know there's some studies being done right here at the U of A on breast cancer and cannabinoids.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's very fascinating, and then there's a lot of evidence of hemp oil and skin cancer.
Yeah, there is.
And then Donald Abrams, who's an integrative oncologist, who's doing a lot of work with cannabis, and not only for the side effects of chemotherapy and radiation, but also as preventing metastases of different types of cancer. So
yeah, that's great.
The more and more you talk about cannabis, it seems like sort of a miracle plant, a lot of things.
Yeah, it really does. And
they're also talking about using it for bipolar, people who are bipolar, brain chemical imbalances. So that's definitely one of the other things that are coming out of this major point.
Yeah, I think we all were at the conference back in April. You missed it? Oh, bummer. Next time.
I found out about 2 days before. So.
Oh, yeah. It was incredible. And I just, you know, we learned so much there that it's mind-blowing. It is. It seems like a miracle plant. And, you know, we tell people it doesn't work for everybody. It works for some. But try it and see. You know, at least there's the option, you know. And this was going to be my first question. And what kind of doctors are you? Because there's a range of doctors that are accepted through the AMMA, Arizona Medical Marijuana Act. They accept 4 different kinds. So if you want to, I'm sorry, you can introduce yourself for a moment if you want. Who the heck are these people?
I'm Nancy Acon. I'm a naturopathic physician. My name is Dr. Heather Moroso. I'm also a naturopathic physician.
And I'm Jasmine
Megan.
I'm a naturopathic physician.
There you go. The NDs have it.
After all, cannabis is a plant, and we're so trained in botanical medicine, so it just fits right in.
That makes sense. That's great. And did you all study here, or I know, doctor?
Yeah, there's 5 schools now in the U.S. that are federally accredited naturopathic medical schools, and I was lucky enough to attend 2 of them. I spent 2 years at the National College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland and finished up here. 2.5 years at the
Southwest
College of Naturopathic
Medicine.
Awesome. And I went to the University of Arizona for my undergrad, and I'm from Seattle, Washington, and I moved back to Seattle, Washington to go to last year, and I ended up hitting Seattle, Washington.
Oh,
Washington.
No.
So, I actually just missed Arizona.
Oh.
So I came back and I transferred back to Southwest College and finished up my degree there.
Oh, cool.
I went to National College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland back in 77 to 81, so I'm an old grad.
Sounds like they're kind of west. A little Western thinking here. Are there some East Coast schools?
University of Bridgeport College, or University of Bridgeport, in Connecticut, and the newest one is outside of Chicago. It's the National University of Health Sciences.
Oh, okay, good. Spread the ND love.
And you know about Fast Serum in San Diego. We have a San Diego branch.
Nice.
Opening this fall, there's an open house in Texas. I think there's going to go up to half here.
San Diego, yeah. Why and how did you guys get into working with medical cannabis and doing certifications and things like that? What was behind it?
Well, I think part of my involvement was going back to when I had a herniated disc and I was in quite a bit of pain and had a very negative reaction to Percocet. I was teaching in an acupuncture school and I was supposed to get a final exam, and by the time I got to school, I had to vomit up with Percocet that I took. So just thinking about other alternatives to my own pain and knowing that, finding out that it's worked fairly well, that I could be a lot more mobile with had a disc issue such that when going from sitting to standing was really, really painful. So it just really helped with that condition. And I also had a pretty interesting healing where I was sort of asking a higher power, like, I'm tired of being in this pain, you know, what can I do? And I just got this message that I should have more compassion for people in pain. So So when I found out that it was going to become medical, I thought, well, this is a great opportunity to try to help people that are dealing with pain primarily.
Cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. Involved.
Thank you.
That's great. Guidance there. Well, Ganji guidance there.
for myself, I started working, when I first got out of school, I started working primarily with patients who are living with HIV and AIDS. And so I saw definitely a lot of side effects and ramifications of the antiretroviral medications they take. One of which was nausea, and one of which was pain, neuropathy, things along those lines. One of which was prescribed often Marinol, which is a synthetic form of THC.
Right.
Which I thought was interesting. And I thought that, and I know, of course, they discourage you to use cannabis outwardly, but then oftentimes, you know, patients would, you know, talk about their experience with cannabis. And I've had patients who were at times seeking behavioral health doctors for various conditions. Obviously, being diagnosed with HIV is a lot of things you have to work out in your own head and your own lifestyle.
I'm sure.
And a lot of those patients would test positive, some of, not a lot, but some would test positive for cannabis. And I remember they weren't allowed to get behavioral health therapy until they were claiming cannabis. But they would prescribe a Marinol. You know, and I was, and I just, it would make me just shake
crazy.
My head.
Yeah.
So, to me, I think that it's such a beneficial plant, and I think that it's important that we advocate for it. So, to me, when I first did it, when this first became legal, I'm like, we need to start working with those patients and help them become legal so they can also continue on their other therapies as well and not be, like, stymied by that. And then from there, it just grew. I think I start working with patients every day, you know, and you see, I think my youngest patient's been 12, and my oldest patient has been in her 80s.
Yeah.
So, and it is just, you see it working, and you see the passion behind it, and all the, like, tremendous effects that it can have for patients. I've had one patient who decreased his monthly dose by 300 pills a month.
Oh my gosh.
And then that passion makes, how can you not even get the snowball?
300 pills a month?
Yeah. It was incredible. Incredible.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's no good. Well, good for, yeah, it's just amazing our bodies can handle that.
Yeah, right.
Hello.
Oh.
No, it's not. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. A cocktail.
Jackie?
I kind of stumbled into a classmate colleague of mine, just asked me if I wanted to split the hours with her at an office she was working at, qualified patients. But when I started at this place, I just fell in love with the work. I mean, I saw a lot of patients at the beginning, and I still do, who had been medicating illegally for many years. And it just this relief. It's deep, you know, like, just, you know, it's having to carry shame and fear for so many years for using a medicine that has been the only thing that has helped them with whatever condition it was. Usually pain, but, you know, oftentimes nausea and a whole slew of conditions that it can help. So, you know, I love that aspect, you know, of seeing, holding a space where there's no judgment and death and validation and
encouragement, right,
to use the medicine that works. And then as I, you know, it's been over a year now that I've been certifying patients, learning more and more about the power of the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing similar stories like what you mentioned, people coming back after a year to get recertified, completely off their oxycontin, completely off their oxycodone, feeling better, growing their medicine, and feeling better than they felt in 5, 10 years. I mean,
feeling happier than like,
oh, God. Yeah.
You know, very relaxed.
And they've had something lifted off their shoulders.
Right.
It's something that's been, you know, all they were trying to do is feel better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have, like, the patient who's never done it before, too.
No.
And the patient, she's, like, in her 60s, and she's an artist. And she has glaucoma. And so she can't lose what...
Oh,
you know,
no.
Which, and the medium she works with is, it's dangerous, you know.
Yeah.
So, she really has to see.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have tried someone who's never done it before and they have their notes and they're taking them. And they come back in a year later and their pressures are down.
Yeah.
So it's brand new medicine to them. So it's kind of fun seeing it both ways. Like people who have been having the shame and the judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have been very conservative to it. And the next, you know, they're like, well, you know what? I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big step for them because it has been illegal, you know, and it's just never been a question for them.
Right. It is huge.
So those guys are fun.
Yeah. Well, and the weight that, you know, that energy carrying around that shame for so long,
right,
you know, that's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the government knows it makes people feel better and can cure some things, and you shouldn't do that. Shame on them. I think we had a question from our audience.
Do you feel pressure from the outside medical community, like what you would call a more traditional doctor? When you meet them, do you feel like they kind of scorn you, or do you feel like they support you?
Very good question. Is there outside pressure from the other medical community? Do they look down upon you, scorn you? How do they?
I've only received positive sort of feedback. And that's because that's all I've received. Doctors who want to qualify patients,
mm-hmm,
but they're either afraid to, or they don't understand the law enough, or they feel like they would get scorned by their, you know, other doctors. But I work at my private practice. So I'm the only one there. And then when I work with
sure,
families, you know, there's certainly no judgment here about that. So, but I don't really mix with doctors who would be scorned by me. So what I've received is just, you know, people sending their patients to me and being glad that somebody is doing this. They're sort of afraid to or don't know how to.
Yeah.
I know a lot of doctors work in clinics that are federally funded, so they don't feel comfortable doing the certification. But I've got a lot of scripts, you know, written by a primary care or a specialist that says, yes, you know, I recommend medical marijuana. I just don't want to be the one
to write it.
Certifying it.
Right.
But it feels like they're pretty open to it. I think a few pain doctors are a little concerned about the interaction, but they probably just don't have the knowledge or the education to look into the fact that, as Dr. May said, that, you know, there's a good synergistic interaction between cannabinoids and opioids. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think for myself, I haven't had, again, I've had a similar experience. Most doctors being sending their patients in, federally funded, often the case.
Mm-hmm.
Is the reason why they can't do it. You know, especially if UMC is such a large entity, you know, they can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Any, like the VA, they can't do it. Almost every major medical clinic has federal funding.
True.
I think where I've seen, and I don't know about you guys, I'm interested to see where I've felt most of the pressure is I've gotten tons of calls from PT
CVS. I've gotten calls from CEOs.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting because I've sent letters, all fax information, and I have kind of things that I always say, inviting them to ask questions. Please communicate with me, because patients certainly wouldn't come in and say, hey, you know what? I was just arrested last night, and now I need to get my crackle. So I'm actually...
we've seen that.
Or, you know, I have patients who, you know, who are they both there in trouble with CPS and now need to protect themselves to get the card. Patients don't offer you necessarily if there's another side and if they have other reasons. They may totally qualify physically. It doesn't mean they don't abuse it.
Sure.
And maybe have other issues that they need to take care of.
Right.
So I think that's one thing that I find frustrating, because it's like I definitely try to communicate, and now I just try and make sure that as soon as somebody calls, if I'm not scheduled and my assistant answers the phone, we schedule time for them to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to go to court tomorrow even to help accept just then the card that I have to that I gave to a gentleman who's very much qualified. I'm not exactly sure what the case is, but we'll find out tomorrow.
Oh,
but
boy.
My first trip down there.
Wow.
I'm trying to defend cannabis on downtown.
Interesting. We'll have you on next week then, too. Report back. Yeah. Inquiring minds. Yeah. Oh, lots of prayers for that. Yeah, well, as long as, you know, you're all doing your jobs the way the state, you know, recommend or not requires, you know, there are physicians out there that take full advantage of, you know, the system and do a lot of bad things. So, you know.
What kind of bad things are you talking about?
Oh, well, there have been, you know, a lot of falsification of records and things like that, or they'll see a ton of people. And they'll gather money and say, we'll send your paperwork out for you. And then it's never done. And the money's collected and the paperwork's done. And then they have to go to a whole other place and pay all again. And we've seen a lot of.
That was very common in the beginning.
Yeah.
I've even seen people get fake cards. They're told that they can give them a card. And I always tell people there's no way you can get a card except through the state. So
if yeah, in the mail.
They can give you a card. Don't go there.
Yeah. Yeah, no. In California, they can, but not here. Yeah, definitely. It comes through the U.S. Post Office. Mm-hmm. Certified. Well, almost.
So what are the most common ailments that the doctors are seeing in certifying?
Chronic pain seems to be the number one that I see. Yeah.
And what is some of the chronic pain that are people coming in with? Just back injuries,
all kinds of injuries, from falling off, you know, cliffs, to kind of a patient that was walking down the street and the car backed out in the driveway, ran him over. I mean, it's amazing how many horrible people have been in, and, you know, just in a matter of seconds, their whole life has changed. Construction accidents, chronic construction accidents, automobile accidents, motorcycle accidents, sports accidents, a lot of
What ailment would you like to see added to the list?
Mm-hmm. Anxiety.
Yeah. You see it?
Migraine.
A lot of people come in with that.
Insomnia and
PTSD.
PTSD, actually, if I could pick one, it would be
that.
And I think that he's inspired by it. I've had young men come through. I had one gentleman who was a sniper rifleman in Afghanistan. I can't even imagine what he saw. And he was, I remember, he was like in his early 20s, just a handsome, beautiful guy. And, you know, just seeing how much I think he could benefit from other aspects besides the physical ailments while he was there. I mean, it's something that I admire. Well, my opinion, amazing, but it was really like, it was something that you and you can see somebody that maybe you can see that. I don't want to say that he was broken, but
I'm sure his spirit was.
It was pretty
wounded. Yeah.
It was wounded. It was extremely wounded, and it was just, you know, there's a certain kind of aha moment that you have, and that was definitely kind of one of them. It's just for what's real, what's now, what's coming through the door, and it was heartbreaking, I think.
Makes you wonder if the military has something to do with it not getting on the list. I don't know. I don't want to sound paranoid.
I'm always paranoid.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me. That's, yeah.
I mean, at the conference, too, they were presenting such great work and research about how effective and helpful it can be for PTSD. I don't understand why it they're claiming there's not enough.
That's right.
Well, they spent 2 whole weeks researching for major ailments. Like, you couldn't spend 2 weeks on part of one of those ailments to really research it, you know? And it's out there. Come on.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm a veteran, and I have PTSD diagnosed. I was told back in my home state before I moved here that they will not approve it because they're not going to pay you disability unless you go below them. That's why they're not. The doctors, the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs, made a statement in 2010. The state allows it because as a veteran, the Department of Veterans Affairs has unique and ultimate jurisdiction over us legally. They said they will not prosecute us if the state allows it. However, their doctors cannot recommend it because it's not federally regulated yet.
But let's play for Zoloft and you lose everything.
We'll make you a walking zombie.
Walking zombie.
Right.
Tax dollars to pay for
where
your
you we'll pay for you to be a walking zombie.
Yeah.
And I had a heart attack and Adderall. It was great.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, it's crazy. When you guys talked about the effects of pills versus cannabis, it's so much safer.
Yeah.
There's no study that can argue any other way.
Well, it just amazed me that they said they couldn't find any information. Like, where were you looking, you know? Where would you go? Walmart? I mean, you know, there's only so many books they have, you know? You've got to reach out, guys. Come on, reach out. There's a lot of information out there.
Yeah,
the
people
are
so afraid of.
True.
I don't understand what
people are
so afraid of.
Well, and we've been talking about that, like, you know, it's illegal. Well, why is it illegal? Mm-hmm. If you just ask why, I mean, because it's definitely medicinal. It definitely helps people. It definitely can cure some ailments and disease and help your body. And
it's amazing when something gets branded. It's, you know, hard to change that reputation.
Yeah.
Even 40, 50 years ago. Even 60, I don't know when Reefer Madness came up, but it's amazing how things just stick with people and they will not open up to new possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
That's why this is so important, because I know that at least with HIV work that I've done, it's HIV and cannabis remind me a lot of each other. And the reason is because nobody wants to talk about it. There's mad stigma around it. You know, like, oh my gosh, she smokes. You know,
mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, that person can't do that.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like,
double whammy.
Like,
drugs,
it's very
true. I definitely see stigma being HIV and medical cannabis going hand in hand with stigma.
Yeah, very much.
And the clients on both sides, the patients on both sides, and what they have to go through. What if they're double whammied and they have. And that's what they're going through right now.
Yeah.
So it's definitely hard.
The judgment alone, and then the, you know, the lack of access to good quality tested medicine is difficult.
That's very
you know,
true. Very,
that's
very
really,
true.
Really difficult. Especially, you know, we have a program and that's great. They need to fix it. they need to work on it a bit and make it so that people can get the right amount and not take advantage of it.
Right.
And then, you know, do stupid things like sell it to friends and neighbors and whatnot and ruin the programs for people, because that's who ruins the programs for people are the people that get raided and shut down and they do stuff that the state says you can't do and they do it anyway.
Right.
And then the places that are trying, that are following the rules, get in trouble because they're just self-standing. So
you get associated with
Exactly. And that is difficult to dispel that whole image and association, because you think people think pot, weed, you know, blow it on weed. Well, why don't you change that perception? Instead of blowing it on weed, why can't we, you know, spend it on medicine? Like, let's think a little differently about how we say things even to people, because I'm sure that didn't make you feel good. You know, it's medicine for you, and it's not just weed, you know. And sure, for some people it is, but that's for them. But the majority of people that, you know, need help, need good quality help and medicine, you know.
So have you, the doctors... Have you guys had troubles with false records, with people bringing in, with patients bringing in false records or anything like that, trying to pull past one's other? Any stories there?
I've had...
Come on now.
I've had interesting requests. All right. Probably and they didn't have the records, and when I asked them to go get their records, they never came back. it was a woman who was a dancer and not ballet. And she had gotten breast augmentation, and they were very, very tender.
Ouch.
And so, but it's one of those things, I'm like, well, I need you to go back to the doctor and give me a brief recommendation that your breasts are, for some reason, abnormally tender, because if you just have breast implants, obviously they're going to be tender, and it's not, I mean, even if it's 6 months later. But that was kind of an interest she wanted to try and address without, like, you know, like,
right, yeah. Here are my records.
I haven't had anything falsified that I know of.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the person you're seeing tomorrow didn't do that.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a lot of times it's with UMC. I mean, we all see in, like, labs and things and doctors know. So we have a, I think we all have a pretty good feeling if it looks like they did it at home.
Yeah, and you probably know the doctors in the area that are sending people, you know.
I mostly have people that, I had one person get really, really angry. It just broken the toe. And I said, is there, you know, it has to be chronic pain. And he got very, very angry and stormed out of the office for it. I've had a few college kids that say they have back pain, and when I ask for records, they, you know, oh, I don't have any records, and my mom never took me to the doctor, or, you know, stuff like that. So I'm like, well,
don't know what to tell you.
Start.
Yeah.
So, kind of, you know, who's legitimate. You said most people that are in severe chronic pain, or they don't have to justify them. They have, you know, records that sick.
Yeah. Sick. Absolutely.
So, but every once in a while, you have somebody that wants to. But I feel for the people that can't afford to go to a doctor, you know, like three times a year for chronic pain, or they've tried everything and they have, like, say, degenerative disc disease, and nothing's changing on an MRI. It's like, why do they have to keep going back to get MRI? So I feel for those people. So I try to work with them in some ways with that.
Sure.
Those issues when if they can't afford, you know, to go that often.
Yeah. Without any names, can I ask the 12-year-old's condition? Is there?
Yeah. He had, it was non-cancerous, the bone tumor that was formed on his growth plate.
Oh.
And so he had to keep having electrodes put down his leg. And so you think of children having growing pains. Well, imagine having a growing pain at your growth plate with a tumor.
Oh.
So the only thing that really helped him is small amounts of edibles in the evening. And that's really what he did. Or sometimes, I mean, and sometimes, you have to get two doctor's opinions, which is great. Now you need to know everybody here, because sometimes you just wonder, like, who should I send?
Yeah.
Right. But you have to get two doctors.
For children under the age of?
Under 18.
18.
And then I had another patient, and unfortunately, I don't think they ever followed up, but another patient who was 17.
Mm-hmm.
He had debilitating migraines. I think that there was just some family conflict about the, you know, the stigma.
Right, sure.
You know, and I don't think I ever thought anyone went through with it, which is too bad. Although he's 18 now.
There you go.
I think about it,
yeah, so. Get a little knock on your door. Remember me? Yeah, exactly. It's great.
What are some of the hardest cases you've had? No name.
I had a man that had a congenital. He was born with a shorter arm, and they were trying to. Or he had a deformity in his elbow joint, and they were trying to fix it, but they ended up botching it even more. And he was in chronic pain. It was in a tough case. Or when you, hearing about botched surgeries is pretty hard, because you know. I always wish they could go back to the day before the surgery and wish that somebody had talked them out of it.
Because
that does happen a lot. You know, there's a lot of back surgeries, failed back surgeries, and failed, you know, a lot of failed orthopedic surgeries. But that was a pretty significant case to me, but it got worse instead of better. A lot of botched surgeries, I would say. Or people got worse instead of better. Told they were going to feel a lot better, but ended up feeling a lot worse.
I think that the veterans, I do think so many veterans who, you know, they qualify because of pain conditions, but so many I hear say, you know, the thing that really helps me is, you know, they tell me the things that they've seen. You know, the trying to keep it together and not getting the support they need. You know, some people have really good reports about the VA and some don't. But that really breaks my heart because there are these men and women who are,
Right. You know, so.
And I think for myself, that's why it's most memorable and most the patient that kind of came and sticks out was she's 26 years old and she has a pontine glioma, which is a brain cancer, mm-hmm. in her brain stem. And she is inoperable. And she this is a terrible story actually. She was working and she was working in the kitchen. And she lost her job because she was having seizures and, you know, around knives and ovens. And
sure,
at that
dangerous.
Point in time, she lost her insurance. Well, now she has a pre-existing condition, right? She doesn't have a child. So she lost all her assets. I mean, she couldn't qualify for assets.
Right.
So she couldn't go get any of her treatments even if she wanted to at this point in time. So she decided to treat alternatively. And I was speaking with her about, you know, the use of cannabis. And she looked at me, she's like, I can't smoke. And it felt so stupid. I'm like, all right. She's like, I can't cough. It hurts. And I'm just like, oh. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so we had tinctures. At that time, it was before, mm-hmm. I'm just going to say it. So we at that time, it was before there was more fluid. Actually, before there was a lot of controversy about it.
Right.
But we had done, she had come in for acupuncture, actually. And she was always, like, upbeat. And she at that point in time, like, always tons of energy. And she still with us. So, I mean, she was consistent. So she came in just exhausted that day.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a tincture, and she had gotten the wrong tincture. It was a sativa tincture and not an indica tincture. So I'm like, wait, you're tired? And she had friends coming in. And, she, you know, at this point in time, you don't know when she's going to see them again or if she is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully that's not
right,
the
case. Knock on
she's
something.
The exception, which I think she
right.
actually might be.
Good.
So we did acupuncture, and then she stood up, and I told her to take the tincture. And it was like nothing I've ever seen in all my years of medicine. Like, literally, like, because it was her foot. She kind of had a drop foot because of where it was pressing that day. And her eyes were a little bit off-filter compared to normal. And it was, I don't know if it was the acupuncture. I don't know if it was the tincture. I don't know if it was a combination of them. But
mm-hmm.
by the time she left the office, she was heading down the street to go meet her friends, and she called me at 10 o'clock that night, leaving a message saying that she was going home because she was tired.
Oh.
She had to. And I was just like, it was so visual. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? You're just like, that's what it's all about.
Wow, yeah.
It's amazing how pain can just totally
debilitate you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And no wonder the major ailment people get is chronic pain, because it really is.
There's so many ways to get chronic pain.
Yeah,
there's
so many
ways
things.
To throw up. You can have pain so much.
Anyway, yeah, yeah, that's true.
I have a few organs going out of
breath. Yeah, chronic pain. So speaking of sativas and indicas and things, do you have a favorite or a strain that you know that works for some things and doesn't work for others? Like, do you, as doctors, recommend, you know, how do you deal with patients that come in and say, I have nausea, what strain do I use? Or I have PTSD, what do I do? You know, what do you guys?
I always refer to thelifeleague.com where you can just log in all your symptoms and find the right strain.
Oh, okay. Very informational.
And
yeah.
I can't retain all the names. There's so many names that I
oh.
get mixed up.
Yeah, there are.
And I know the indica and sativa, but then we have so many different cool names. And I'm like, just go to Leafly.com.
There you go. Sounds cool saying that right there. Yeah. Leafly, come on, guys.
What I usually do, if I do with patients when they come in, it's almost too an advanced question. I think that for the most part, when people who come in to try and start or to initiate getting their car, especially for the first time, you're getting follow-ups are a little bit different because, you know, they've had them in about for a year.
Right.
And I think that it's more just educating them on sativas, indicas, and hybrids,
mm-hmm.
edibles, and then smoking it. And those kind of, like, I call it the cannabis 101.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time, especially now when things are kind of like tumultuous and not
right.
exactly ironed out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just start there. And then my hope is, especially when the dispensaries get here, when the clubs are going on a more regular basis, and before the raids, and before
right.
has gotten very quiet this moment in time.
Yeah.
Just try and work with people who you think of the community, you know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think it's a good synergistic relationship. You know, it's almost like going to the pharmacy. Like, as a doctor, you can prescribe a certain thing, but the pharmacist is going to go, well, you know what, why don't you get a generic and do this?
Right.
And I think that's, well, as a physician, I'm dying to make sure I know every strain, all the nuances, but I also think it's a kind of a synergistic relationship with the clubs or dispensaries or whichever way.
And having that education back and forth.
Yeah, and it's better for the patient.
It is.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing it
about a case. And
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with what you just said. I also think it's neat the way the law is set up in that it's real empowering for the patient to just kind of, well, we're not prescribing, we're just telling the state that they qualify.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to experiment with which strains work best for them.
That's a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
The delivery method works best.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like the chemicals. Certain chemicals work for certain people, certain strains work for certain people, and
right.
not for everybody. It's the same
right. right.
Whatever it may be. You know, they're definitely, the patient's an individual.
Mm-hmm.
Tell people not to be stupid, please. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't tell people you're growing and don't
right.
take the car out of the bar. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Check this out, guys. Yeah, no.
You know, show the construction people come to your house, all your pot plants, or you know, you never know what somebody might think or do or how it would take your influence prescription out. You like it out and shake it.
Hey guys, check out my cabinet.
Yeah.
No, we hope not.
End up, you know, getting something stolen or something.
Oh, worse.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't agree or they we don't know that the construction worker does or doesn't agree with what you're doing. So
sure.
I'm pretty private about it. I think that happened like that in Phoenix once. Somebody was showing a cable that
Next thing you know.
Next thing you know, I guess I had more than 12.
Happy cable guy. Oh, man. Yeah.
I had a patient get arrested because he had 7 pounds. Of...
Yeah.
Well,
and
the neighbor thing. I think the neighbor.
Yeah. And depending, I mean, growers, if with 12 plants, you can get a lot of cannabis off 12 plants.
Yeah.
So it's a very challenging thing for cultivators to only have their 2.5 ounces when they got that from one plant. Well, what, you know, and more. What about the other 11?
I think it's going to be legislation that shakes us all down eventually. You know, there's going to have to be cases that go to court and there's going to have to be questions to set up because it is too gray.
Yeah.
You know,
it is.
Areas, in a lot of areas. And it makes it difficult.
Well, and then you have places. Yeah, like L.A., and I don't want to pick on L.A., but 1,000 dispensaries just in that county alone, like 1,000.
Wow.
That's a little overboard. I mean, it's great you have dispensaries, but come on, guys. You know, I mean, I think what Arizona did setting up their CHAs and their limited amount of dispensaries was a good idea. There's some good things about the program. It's some things that they'll definitely improve on, I know. But, yeah, you can't let people get out of hand with it, you know.
I believe that, too. That's great. It's easy. You can do that easily at this point in time.
Yeah.
We don't have a liquor, you know, 1,000 liquor stores probably.
No,
county,
like that
now.
Yeah, right?
That's
right.
Interesting. That
I know.
That's happened.
Yeah. Got out of hand. Chomster? You look a little...
How do you want to see the medical over there. Cannabis used in the future? Like as far as keep on smoking and using tinctures and...
Just the whole, like, program. I mean, in general, what do you see as a perfect program for people?
Well, it'd be nice if we could expand on the conditions that qualify legitimately, that people know the benefit from. I think it's great to explore different delivery systems. Maybe there'll be a cannabis patch at some point.
Good idea.
You know, about injections. Just experimenting with ways to maybe do edibles that aren't always sweet, especially with people that might be pre-diabetic or getting older or don't want to do a lot of
gluten-free.
Gluten-free. I mean, that's easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Just
just looking at the healthier edibles.
Sure. Yeah. Definitely.
And in Canada, also the vaporizer, the volcano, is their version of FDA approved there.
Interesting. FDA, see your little FDA sticker on your volcano. Organic. Yeah. Yeah, why not?
I would look for medical school to what we had to kind of learn on our own, and I'm sure still learning about. But I never learned about the endocrine world.
I think we had half a day.
Did you?
Not of any kill. It was a vague memory, though.
Oh, I was like. Yeah, I thought that was me. Yeah.
I think it was like, let's shut the books for right now and talk about this. That sort of thing, like something that was just, it definitely wasn't on the class. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. I think it'd be, actually, I'd like to see us get rid of the cards. There's no other medicine out there that you need a card for. And to me, the card has a stigma. To me, this card is almost like a scarlet letter. Like, do you need your Viagra card? Yeah. You need your diet, you know, your insulin card.
What about your Tylenol card? You know, I mean, come on.
Either, I mean, if it wasn't as much as just legalizing it, I think that it's silly to get your card. And I think that one thing, at least on our level, I think that we have very little control as physicians what patients do in any of our doors. Like, ideally, they're supposed to come back over the year. And, you know, we definitely try and do that. But
right.
The amount of 2.5 ounces every 2 weeks, again, it's, and if that's not closely monitored, that sets up potential for people to take advantage of that system.
Sure,
and then if
absolutely.
They get in trouble, we're the, like, all the CEOs being like, do you know? I'm like,
yep.
Yeah, well, you know, I can't control that. It's completely out of my hands when they walk out of that door to, like, how much they can have with it and how they're going to abuse it. Like any other pill that's out there, too. You write a prescription for Vicodin, it doesn't mean that somebody's not going to go take that and sell them off.
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
You don't know that people aren't going to go take them from their dad and then take theirs as well.
You trust people. You know, they sign the little tablet at the pharmacy and says, blah, 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 I've seen the doctor, blah. And you hope that they do what they're supposed to.
Right.
Unfortunately, we don't.
So they sign the attestation, they sign the informed consent, but...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like we can take their hand and babysit them.
Right.
Until, you know, for the next year until they come back.
Yeah, no.
Responsibility.
It is.
People don't are better at that than others.
This is true. America.
I just wonder how the dispensaries are going to compete with each other or how they're going to keep prices comparable. To me, if people can grow their own, why would they want to go to a dispensary?
Right.
Right. Well, some people don't want to grow. Some people can't. Don't know how. They don't have the space. They rent, things like that. Or, you know, and it's not an easy thing to do. You know, it really takes, if you're going to do it right, it's a lot of time, commitment, love, and care, and just...
You become a farmer.
You do. You absolutely do. Absolutely do, yeah.
You compare it to food, and it'd be like, let's say you grow the most beautiful tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, you know what? There is a Safeway next door, like, really?
Mm-hmm.
So it's ridiculous. I know there's a lot of stigma around cannabis, obviously, and that's
sure.
part of it, but in the sense, the basics of it is if you can garden, grow, and be a farmer, and create your own medicine or food, and... those are not mutually exclusive.
Being self-sustainable, I think.
Right.
That's a great concept now, isn't it?
But therein lies the problem. we actually are almost out of time, but we have a little book we want to read. Probably we'll speak of these. Here we go. I think this is where we are. But we want to say thank you to Dr. May, Dr. Moroso, and Dr. Eitan for being here, for taking their time to come down here and talk with us and everybody out on the airwaves.
Thank
you very much for being here. And hopefully someday we'll get you gals a perfect program in which to work in or something close. So we have a book that we like to read. We've got a few minutes left. It's called Empathy, Food for Thought. And it is an attempt to show at a glance the illogical distinction between what is socially and legally accepted, the why, and what is forbidden, the why not. Scientists and doctors are making wonderful discoveries about how cannabis exerts its beneficial effects. We need to publicize their findings in an unbiased way to the widest possible audience. We need to stop the obstruction of research and the criminalization of a useful plant. So here we go. I'm going to let Mr. Sean here read the why of, you can describe the not so maybe pretty picture, kind of interesting over there. Looks like Pepto-Bismol had its way with that photo. What we got going on there?
Well, it looks like a class full of students all lining up to get some kind of medicine. And it says, Ritalin.
Yeah, looks like that's Ritalin.
And the kids are all standing in line. The teacher's putting
it
on the kid's
bag of
tongue.
It.
And so it looks like this side of the class has already done it.
Yeah.
And this side of the class looks like
they're on
they
their
haven't
way.
Gotten it yet, but they're about to
experience.
Set up straight. Pay attention to the teacher
and zone out
and not zone out.
Yeah. So read what that has to say.
So children on Ritalin. In the United States, by the year 2000, 7 million children diagnosed with attention deficit disorder were prescribed Ritalin, a strong form of speed that lowers appetite and stunts their growth. Other known side effects include nervousness, dizziness, insomnia, joint pains, headaches, increased blood pressure, fever, rapid heartbeat, abdominal pain, and psychosis. There have been 51 deaths among children and adults taking drugs for ADHD, attention deficit disorder, in the United States since 1999. Similar drugs for ADHD include Lilly's Strattera, Cherie's Adderall, and the WHO's Selectra.
Sylert.
In 2004, these companies respectively generated sales that amounted to approximately $552 million, $607 million, and $60 million.
I don't know. If you can't say it, maybe you shouldn't take it. If you can't pronounce it, you know.
Cannabis. It's easy to say.
Yeah.
Ask your doctors about it.
And the why not? Here's the opposite here. You got a really nice, beautiful green picture with happy patients watering little gardens and walking around with their volcano bags and smiles, and they look peaceful. And this is the why not. Adults on cannabis. Recent studies show that cannabis can be useful in nursing homes, alleviating symptoms of Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, arthritis, chronic pain, and the aggression that comes with dementia. Although the elderly account for only 12.7% of the nationwide population, they consume roughly a third of total prescription medications and about 40% of all over-the-counter medicines, according to a 2006 study in Clinical Geriatrics. Side effects from taking large amounts of powerful pills by many nursing home residents can be severe. Yeah, I bet they can. That's flooring, you know. Right now, Robert Platshorn is our Square Grouper Black Tuna Diary guy. He is doing a tour called the Silver Tour, and he's going around the country when the government lets him these days. And he's talking to the senior citizens and getting them to vote. And you can just go to Facebook and type in the Silver Tour. And he's got a program out this fall, I believe, called Should Grandma Smoke Pot? Yeah, and it's all about his quest to get the other spectrum of age there to come out and vote and help patients of all ages get the cannabis that they need.
That'd be great if Medicare and Medicaid would cover medical marijuana.
Oh, someday. Maybe another 50 years. That's all right. We'll wait. We got nothing but time, right? Well, not here, we don't. We're about out of time here, but we do want to thank again growershouse.com for all your wholesale price hydroponics needs.
AZ Med Testings, we're getting our medication tested.
That's right. AZMedTest.com. just make sure your meds are safe and good for you. And MJSurvival.com, Mary Jane's Survival Guide. This is a great guide full of information and all sorts of things. We would like to thank Tumbleweeds Health Center for hosting this. And our awesome, amazing, incredible doctors that are doing this for our patients around Arizona, because without you, you know, we just can't get the help that we need. Stay tuned. We've got, in the weeks ahead, we've got a representative from Vapor Smoke, one of the tiny portable vaporizers, who's going to be on our show. Jeff Kaufman, who does a lot of writing in the Mary Jane Survival Guide, Watermelon Girl from Canada, is going to be on our show. Remember, be smart,
educate,
be safe, and we will see you all next Wednesday for another edition of Weed Say Wednesday. Thank you all.
See you later.
Thanks, John.